Hello.
I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Kim.
Welcome back to episode 11 of season 5 of the Massive Fans Book Club podcast. In this episode, we pick up where we left off our previous episode, chapter 43. This was actually part 2 of what was supposed to be one episode. But then Kim and I had way too many feelings about Amran and everyone keeping secrets and the magic weapons Anesta accidentally made. And anyway, here we are, part 2. Any quick...
I don't know. Do I? Maybe. I don't know. It's been kind of chaotic, so I really don't know. Like, chaotic, not bad, but just chaotic.
I get that.
So, I don't know. I'm just trying to make sure I haven't fallen apart into 10 pieces right now.
I understand. My only update is that I'm in the middle of redecorating my office / craft room. So I'm recording with like half my normal equipment in a new part of the room that I previously had like cabinets in it. So I don't know anything about like the acoustics of this corner. So if I sound whack or you hear my air conditioner more or less than usual or something like that, my bad.
We'll get there. I promise. I mean, I did do some cleaning this weekend and
there you go. Organized. See?
I made space on one of my bookshelves so that I can actually spread out my books and...
Yeah. See, that's like, yeah, doing the same. And I'm like making more room for like craft stuff. I think that it's like spring cleaning, but fall, I don't know. I heard a thing about the planets and something about the moon and, you know, Mercury in and out of the microwave or whatever. So I think now is the time of year where like in the spring people clean to like get all the ugh out. But like in the fall, you like make space for like... hunkering down for winter. So like for you and I, hunkering down for winter looks like books and crafts.
I guess. I don't know. You know what it is? Part of it for me is though I've always, I love fall. And so for me, fall is like, I guess in many ways I follow the traditional Celtic way of looking at it where this is really the end of the year going into the new year. You know, if you look at the Celtic / Wiccan way, I don't know how else to explain it, but
sure.
Halloween, aka Samhain, is the new year,
right? And no, I agree. So you and I, the spring rejuvenation people get, you and I have more like the fall rejuvenation,
right?
Yeah,
for me, it's like I'm starting over and I'm getting ready for new year. I mean, like,
yes.
Well, actually, since we've recorded, I've cleaned 13 bags of clothes out of the house between
and
donated them.
Right.
I need to do a lot more, but I mean, 13 bags.
Yeah, that's kind of incredible.
It's kind of a lot. Most of it came out of my kids' room, not mine.
Sure.
Cause I'm much better about that than anyone else in the house.
Sure.
So I did do that. And then, you know, like I said, it's prompted me. I ended up getting what I was hoping was going to be a cabinet for my office for work. And it's too big. So I put it in my office at home and it now stores all of my watercolor and pens and pencils, my markers, like all of my drawing, painting supplies are spread out. And I have plenty of room to add more, which I probably shouldn't say too loudly.
Totally get that.
Well, the problem is I'm now looking at the pile that you can't see next to me over here, next to the closet.
Sure.
And it just kind of motivates me that I really at some point need to get my mom to get off her butt and clean out this closet and get her shit out of it so that we can organize it for things like the sewing machine.
I understand.
I would like to have some stuff in there that we can do. Organize the crafts and, you know, organize things like the sewing machine and put the supplies and all in there because the closet's huge and deep.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, like a small cabinet or something would be great in there. And then we could, you know, get organized. Like, I'm one of those people, I really do want to be organized and I might feel better. But right now I'm not there. And I really
should. And you feel a little bad and crazy. Also, you'll probably notice that in the since last episode, Kim and I have only gotten more congested because we have fall allergies.
They're fabulous. So I apologize now. Definitely, definitely congested. Yeah. I feel it. I sound it. I may have to like mute my mic because I'm coughing. I spent a good chunk of this weekend sleeping because my poor body is trying desperately not to let me get sick. So I'm trying to listen to my body. you know, little.
Well, things. My favorite thing is that you and I being snotty means we have something in common with chapter 43, Cassian.
So true. I feel Cassian's pain so much.
So on that note, do you want to kick off in honor of not being able to breathe, or do you want me to do it because I can breathe a little better?
Well, I started the last one, so you start.
All right, I'll do it. So chapter 43, Cassian can't breathe.
I sympathize.
That's because if you recall, not maybe we talked about it last episode. I guess, yeah, maybe it was last episode, maybe it was two episodes ago. Anyway, the point is we've decided like the next course of action is we need to talk to Eris again and we need to send Nesta this time. Obviously, like Nesta's not gonna go by herself. She and Cassian are going, and remember we always meet in the Spring Court, and Nesta is suddenly realizing as they're traipsing through the Spring Court that she can hear Cassian like
poor dude. So I do like her initial thought of the Spring Court is one, it's beautiful, but two, it'd be great for Elaine.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. She's like, ooh, pretty flowers. This is nice. The weather's pretty good. Elaine would love it here. Is he scratching and sniffing?
Like, he's like, I hate this place. Allergies. And I'm like, dude, I get ya. I feel ya.
I just like how she asked it, because I swear it's like how everybody has ever asked us if they've worked in an office while we have bronchitis. They're like, what's wrong with you?
Allergies?
Yeah. And that's how she says it. What's wrong with you? And he's like, I hate this place. Allergies. And she like kind of has a moment where she's like, what the hell? Like, is this man really just suffering in silence over here? And she explains, like, literally, like, this is the stupidest thing. Like, she can tell he's embarrassed. She's like, this is the stupidest thing to be embarrassed about. Like, you can't help it. And she, like, explains that, you know, when they were poor humans, she couldn't, like, bathe very often. So, like, her allergies to pollen, which aren't that bad, were, like, made so much worse because she couldn't get rid of it, you know? Like, when they had had money, she could bathe all the time and everything was always clean all the time. But she was like, by the time we had no money, everything sucked. And so she was just like, don't even worry about it. Like, yeah, allergies exist. Pollen sucks. I'm here with you, bro.
I do feel his pain. I really do.
But you're right. So then after she thinks about Elaine liking it here because she had thought of Elaine when, you know, she's thinking through what she said about the pollen and how, like, at one point when they were poor, they were so poor that she was lucky to bathe once a week. And half the time, like, she and Elaine would have to share the same bath water. And so she's now thinking about Elaine and she's like, oh, she would love it here. If she could just, like, come to see it, she would really enjoy it. And then she's like, yeah, you know, except for she won't come see me. So I doubt she's going to like come traipse out here to see this. Too bad that, you know, she basically decided she liked everybody else better than me. And it sucks. But I do love this one line she has where she's thinking about the Spring Court. She goes, and too bad the Lord who ruled these lands was a piece of shit.
Yep. Tell us how you feel there, Nesta. You do that, Ness.
Oh my God. I love it. Eris is a few minutes late. Nesta is not cool with this. Nesta's like, yo, punctuality, I respect that. And he's not here, what the fuck? And we have a little moment where we're like, yeah, he's a jackass, you know, he be like he be. And as Cassian is expressing this sentiment, of course, that's when Eris shows up, you know. I mean, like, that's like how it always goes, though.
Yes, and just being the polite, cheerful dude that he is. He's like, yeah. Oh, are you talking about me or the brute next to you? I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah. I will say, and I think this is just like a little side comment that's very interesting. So I have seen some people be like, you know, like, oh, I love Cassian, but Nesta and Eris would be such an interesting match, yada, yada, yada. And I will say, this is what I think is so interesting. And only because I spent so long paying attention to every little word that Feyre had said back in book one. Remember, I would flag every time she pointed out that like Lucien was really good looking or Rhys was really good looking, but never Tamlin. Looking at like how those paragraphs were structured, I think this is very interesting how she describes Eris, because actually it doesn't make it sound like she likes him that much. Because I thought maybe it would, and it actually doesn't. She does give him a compliment. She does tell, you know, say that he's dressed immaculately, very Rhys-like, very, you know, rich and put together.
Yeah, I mean.
and his hair is, you know, nice. He did a good job on his hair, and he has, like, not ugly features. But she does point out that he has like no joy in his eyes, nothing like remotely that would like draw you to him as a person. You know what I mean? Exactly. Like he may look nice, but there's nothing like bringing you in. And so I just thought that that was interesting because as when I first started reading the paragraph, I'm like, Eris is dressed immaculately. I was like, oh, are we about to have one of these moments where like Feyre was always like very complimentary of Lucien? No. I mean, sort of, but no.
He's handsome. I think that's about where it ends.
And that's about it. So yeah. So just like sidebar, I thought that was interesting. And he kind of looks her up and down for a minute. I think A, not necessarily expecting to see her, and B, certainly not expecting to see her show up in leathers and boots and like with Cassian. You know what I mean? And so I will say I laugh because he does have a very similar speech pattern to Rhys. He says, hello, Nesta Archeron. And I laugh because I do stand by the thought process people have where I think Eris gets painted in the bad light that in theory, back in ACOTAR, other people painted Rhys with.
Fair. I would agree. Yeah, yeah.
So I do think there are parallels intentionally that SJM is drawing between how we meet Rhys and how we get to know Eris. But just that's like my two cents. Anyway.
Fair enough. I totally would agree with that.
Eris is like, yo, I'm here because you told me you got informations about my missing soldiers. And they're like, we have good news and bad news. And Eris is like, bad news. Obviously start with the bad news. Always start with the bad news. This is what? And so Cassian's like, cool, cool, cool. Most your soldiers are dead. And the good news is two of them survived. And Eris is like, that's all the same news. That is not good news and bad news. That is all just one piece of news. But okay. And he's like, okay, cool. What happened? And Cassian's like, well, we sort of killed them because they were kind of attacking us. And Eris is like, I'm sorry. You're going to have to like roll back and explain what happened. And so Cassian kind of does. And he explains, you know, they had been out in the bog of nasty. And
somehow
the soldiers showed up. But
that they had been enchanted by Briellen and Koschei.
Right. So it's not like they showed up and said, hey, we're lost. Can you help us? They showed up and were, you know, murder machines, essentially. So Asriel and Cassian had no choice. Of course, Eris points out, well, you managed to allow two to survive, to interrogate them. So I'm sort of feeling like maybe you could have let a few more of them live, especially if you knew they were enchanted and they weren't trying to kill you just because they were assholes. And Cassian's like, we did what we could, okay? And it's kind of an awkward moment for everyone because Nesta has to step in and kind of be like, I do see both sides of this. I can see why Eris is like, yo, you killed a bunch of my dudes and they weren't even attacking you to be mean. They were literally like under a spell. What the fuck? And Cassian's like, we didn't want to die. What the fuck? And Nesta's like, okay, guess what? Everybody, we did what we could. There were 24 of them. It was a nightmare. Two survived, and we asked them what the fuck was up, and they literally, like, couldn't tell us. Like, they are so screwed up, my dude. And Eris is like, all right, fine. Like, spit it out. So, like, what do we know?
I do want to point out something. Because Eris does say, but there were more than that. So we only saw 24 of the soldiers. Fair. So he had more than that? That have disappeared. So
fair.
Okay.
Now, what I don't know, I'm trying to think back if it was ever brought up. Did he lose all of them at once or have they been trickling off? He
lost them all at once.
Because I know he lost that whole unit, but in my brain, that whole unit's what they came up on. No. I didn't know if he's been losing more in the meantime.
No, he lost the whole unit, apparently. They only came up on about half of that.
Weird. So, yep, that's awkward.
And I say that because, I'm re-listening to the book because it's easier for me to listen to it while I commute.
Sure.
And I'm ahead again. Surprise. From where we are. And I remembered that they made a reappearance. Like, we see them, but I totally forgot the when and the how, the why and all. And I was like, oh.
Got you. Good to know. Mm-hmm. Cool.
So I wanted to point that out because it's one of those you gloss over it, you don't think about it, and then all of a sudden when it happens, you're like, oh, that's right.
I can see how that's a problem. Cool. So there's dudes missing. That's going to be a problem. That's good to know. Eris and Cassian are kind of quibbling back and forth about, you know, well, did you have to kill them all? Yeah, I did. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Nesta's like, okay, but like, let's talk like real shit that matters. I have questions. And my question is, how did your soldiers who are out there with no idea what the fuck's going on other than like being killing machines, who gave them the ash arrows that they were shooting with? Like, where'd they come from? Like, did you give them those? And Eris is like, no, huh? What? And it's like, right. So did Briallen arm those soldiers? Like, what's happening? Like, what? What?
But then she's like,
what?
Yeah. And apparently his whole, but no, I didn't do that. She saw through it.
Right.
If he could toy Cassian, then she'd return the favor. Who were you storing those arrows for? She mused.
You're right.
Enemies abroad are an enemy at home.
But she does bring up a good point. Like, are you trying to kill somebody else or are you trying to kill a certain High Lord? Which is fair. I don't know. It just doesn't play well for me. I don't see how this makes any sense. I don't know. I have a hard time believing that Eris is working with all of them, but also trying to like run his own coup. I don't know. I don't feel like that makes a lot of sense to me, but.
Is he really running his own coup or is he going after someone else?
Yeah, I don't see that either, but okay, let's see. We'll see where it goes. That seems like a lot, but all right. I didn't peg him for a double agent, but here we are.
I mean, but he is a double agent, truly. No, he is, because his father thinks he's on his side.
Yeah, fair.
And yet here he is working with Rhysand and the Night
Queen. Yeah. I think the implication is, the question is he out here? I don't know which High Lord she's wondering if he's trying to kill. If it's his own father or if it's actually Tamlin.
Is it really Tamlin he's going after or is it even Rhysand?
Yeah, I don't see what going after Rhysand would do for him, though. A, because he'd logically lose, and we all know it. Like, I think here's what I'm confused about. I feel like the man's resources are spread too thin, so that's why I'm, like, not convinced he could actually pull off any of these things and why I was like, I don't know. To me, I don't really feel like he could pull any of this off because I think his resources are spread too thin.
I really think it's to go after his dad, truthfully.
Yeah, I guess that would make the more sense. If we believe that he is doing that, then I could sort of see that, I suppose. I suppose I could see that. But I was like, I don't actually, like, the difference. Okay, so like, I always draw the parallels between him and Rhys, but the difference is Rhys was the High Lord, so he has power and pull. Eris doesn't. So like, even if Eris has Rhys mentality, I would think that Eris would also know he doesn't have the resources at this time. So I guess that's why I'm like, I'm having a hard time understanding what the goal here is. But anyway, Eris tries to just throw the whole conversation by being like, you're wasting my time. And Nesta's like, you're wasting ours. Like, we don't know anything about your stupid soldiers. Like, maybe you did it for all I fucking know, which is, again, I don't think he's got the resources, but okay. And the crux of the problem is still trying to iron out this Briallen Baron alliance situation. Like, it's sort of like what I said about, like, I don't understand anybody's motivation at this moment. And I'm not saying that's like a poor writing choice. That's just where the characters are at. The characters don't even understand the motivations fully at this time. Sure. Because here's like, so which one is it? Is Briallen allied with Baron? And if so, why would she then, you know, essentially, you know, muddle brain these soldiers? And if that's the case, then did he act like, is he the one supplying his own soldiers, or is Briallen still sort of part of the equation in arming these soldiers for or against Baron? Like, nobody, what's the motivation? What are we doing? And I don't think Nesta knows. I don't think Eris knows. I don't think at this given time, anybody has all the pieces of the puzzle.
I'd agree with that.
So anyway, Nesta's essentially accusing Eris of being full of shit. So there's that. And she ends it with, if you want to play warmonger, go right ahead, Eris. I like an interesting opponent. But Eris says, I am not your enemy. And that's the part where I see, that's why I'm like, no, I kind of believe him though, because I think he knows he doesn't have the resources.
I agree. I don't think he is the enemy. However.
Yeah.
His history has not he has not done him any favors.
No, absolutely not. And I'm not saying it does. And I'm not saying he's a good guy. I'm just simply saying I don't think he's the enemy. Like we said, I was thinking of him not being a double agent in the sense of I'm saying he's not against them. He is a double agent against his own father, but not in the other direction.
No, he's not a double agent against them. You're right. And he is a double agent.
Yeah, I guess that's where I was trying to say, like, I don't think he's the enemy. I think we keep setting him up. Like, there's just enough doubt to think he's going to be on the wrong side, but I actually don't think he is. I just also think that, like I said, he's a Reese minus the resources, which means he may have a plan or a plot in his head. Whether or not he can actually pull that off is questionable. It's sort of the same problem of why Lucien and his cronies don't get the respect. It's not that they probably couldn't pull off the same thing the Inner Circle does at most given times. It's that they don't have the resources. So anyway, there's that. Cassian does kind of back that up, trying to, give an olive branch, so to speak, of, you know, he's saying, I'm not your enemy. Okay, cool. You're right. We are not enemies. I'm a little sorry for killing your guys. Maybe I could have tried a little harder not to kill as many of them, but, you know, here we are. Let me know. I understand those were like peeps with families. If they need anything, you let me know. I will help take care of that. Which I think was a diplomatic response, like good for Cassian. He clearly went to at least one class on how to be a diplomat.
Yeah, but then he leaves himself wide open.
It's okay. It is. It's okay. He tried. Eris has to go fuck shit up. Eris looking at Cassian, looking at Nesta. Eris says to Nesta, for I don't know what reason other than to piss Cassian off and be a dick.
Ding, ding.
You're a pretty little treat. I'd be happy to play any manner of game with you, Nesta Archeron. Cassian tries really hard not to go all like murdery. He then says another shitty thing. And this is why I do laugh though. So then he says another shitty thing where he says, when you get tired of the animal, come find me. I'll show you how a future High Lord plays. And as awful as it is that not something from ACOTAR or ACOMAF that Reese would have said to Tamlin?
Yeah.
Like, the parallels are a little uncanny.
Maybe not that crass. I don't think Reese would have called him an animal.
I don't know, actually. Maybe not by ACOMAF post Under the Mountain, but absolutely when he was playing into his caricature of himself in ACOTAR.
Absolutely, but thinking more after Under the Mountain.
Yeah, maybe not Under the Mountain, but definitely pre Under the Mountain, I think he absolutely would. Whatever, it doesn't matter, because right about the time Cassian's thinking about all the ways he could like use Eris's entrails to make an outfit, he decides, they all hear something and everybody goes like dead still.
Yep.
And okay, like as soon as this happened, I was like, oh, what's gonna hit the fan? And then as soon as they were the second sentence, I was like, oh, this is even weirder than I expected. Nesta felt it a heartbeat later, the presence creeping towards them on soft paws. We have a visitor.
I wonder what visitor it is.
Well, in fairness, is it a visitor or did he just come home?
Either way, I mean, there's really one obvious choice that would kind of freak out both Eris and Cassian at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So Cassian puts Nesta behind him just as Tamlin in beast form appears.
Yep.
Yeah. Now you have to remember, Nesta knows what this looks like because this is what showed up to their house.
She's not going to forget that.
I kind of forgot that for a second. Like when I read it, I immediately remembered, but that's not something that sits front of mind when I think of like what, you know, when I think about Nesta and what Nesta knows. Mm-hmm. I kind of forget that that was the introduction to this whole situation as far as Nesta is concerned, was that beast walking in their door and demanding somebody pay their half of a, you know, deal essentially. Mm-hmm. So that happened. So she'll never forget the look, you know, of Tamlin in beast form. And Tamlin stops in beast form and he assesses Eris and Cassian and then realizes it's Nesta, it does have to be weird because I don't guess Tamlin has really seen Nesta in this situation? Like, Nesta, like, does Tamlin even know really anything about Nesta? Like, I know that, remember, Elaine got captured, and then Tamlin was kind of part of the getting Elaine back situation, but he wouldn't have ever seen Nesta, right?
I mean, he saw Nesta at the house when he kidnapped Feyre.
Well, right, but I'm just saying, since that moment, and then they grabbed her and they dunked her in the cauldron, since the cauldron, he hasn't seen her, right?
No, I mean, he saw her at the... No, because he saw her at the house at the meeting after the battle, after the war.
Right.
So, I mean, he has seen her, but he hasn't really seen her.
Right, not... Yeah, he's seen her, like, around. My point is, I guess, he hasn't seen her participating until this moment.
True.
As a participating inner circle individual.
Very true.
So that's weird. And so he stares at her for a good long time because, well, that's weird. And all she can think, which is, I think, exactly where my brain would have gone, was, wow, this fucking guy is who Feyre wanted to get back to. Like, when Feyre came home to us, she wanted to go back and save him. Fucking weird. Weird twist of events. That,
you know, she acknowledges Feyre gave up everything for him, including her mortal life. And then he had taken the love that she had for him, and he literally destroyed it and twisted it and nearly killed Feyre in the process, destroying her practically. And she acknowledges it wasn't until Rhys and the Inner Circle brought her back.
Yep.
That she had figured out how to be herself again. So Nesta's like, well, fuck you if you helped us at the end with Highburn. And, you know.
Yep.
As far as she's concerned, she's playing the big sister card. It's like, fuck you. You unforgivably hurt and damaged my sister.
I know. I was going to say, that's what I really liked about this, was that she thinks through it. Outcome of it is when she's like, she doesn't care like what he's done. Tamlin had hurt Feyre, end of story, and that's unforgivable. So she does remember back to their initial meeting, and she has a little bit of like a self-hate moment where she thinks like, that was my younger sister. When he showed up and he asked, like, and he said he's going to take somebody, I should have volunteered. Like, I should have gone. But she's like, well, but, and she does acknowledge a little bit, which I think is important, that if things had been different, like if she had been then who she is now, she would have.
Correct.
She just wasn't there at that time, which is fair. Like, I think like that to me is a huge like self-growth moment for her to be able to like see that, be upset for a second, acknowledge it, and kind of move on and deal with the moment at hand. So like, to me, this is like a really good moment.
Right, because she's like, you know, she flat out tells him, you're not going to touch us. And she's letting her power kind of glow in her eyes.
Yeah.
And I love his response, because his response is, I have every right to kill trespassers on my lands.
And her response is gold. Are these still your lands? Last I heard, you don't bother to rule them anymore.
And Aerys is like,
Aerys is like, what is happening? Tamlin says a thing that a couple of chapters ago would have fucked Nesta up pretty hard, but now Nesta's like, nope, I don't give a shit. He says, you're exactly as nasty as your sister said you were. And Nesta just simply says, I'd hate to disappoint.
Yes, but she does tell him flat out that he better keep his mouth shut and not tell anyone that he saw them there.
Yeah, and she points out that, like, he kind of owes her. Like, I went in the cauldron because of you. Elaine went in the cauldron because of you. Like, half of this fucking shit that all of us have been through is because of you.
I went into the cauldron because of you. Elaine went into the cauldron because of you. She's like, I don't care how much you apologize or try to atone for it or claim you didn't know the King of Highburn would do such a thing or that you begged him not to do it. You colluded with him because you thought Feyre was your property.
And now in a weird moment that calls back, she points at Tamlin. And he immediately is like, ugh! And Cassian is like, ugh! And Aerys is like, I don't know what's happening, but
Yeah, because she's like, put the finger down, you witch. And she's like, oh, I'm so glad you remembered what happened to the last person I pointed my finger at. We're leaving.
She just steps back. And then I do love this visual. I've loved it every time it's used. And, you know, because they fly and winnow and all these things, that it's a quick exit. We're going now. Step back. Cassian's already got his arms open, wrapped around, and we're out of here.
Well, no, but not only that, like, even Eris kind of nods his approval of how she's handling this. But before they completely disappear, she's like, tell anyone you saw us, High Lord, and I'll rip your head from your body, too.
I know. And then they're off. I just love that. I love the visual of that, though. Every time I read it, where it's just like, okay, bye-bye now. Steps back. Out.
Tell people you saw us, like, I'm going to kill it. You. Literally. Bye!
I love it. I love it. And then we get a snowflake.
Thank God for snowflakes, right? The snowflake Nest is at the library, and she's staring into the darkness. Apparently, instead of trying to do the stairs this time, the library, and now she's staring into the pit of darkness. You know, and she's just, she doesn't know what's going on there. And she's just, too many thoughts. Too many thoughts. And
it's that whole thing where I don't know. I know you and I experience this. I'm sure many people do, but I'm sure there are other, like, I'm sure there's a subset of the population that does not. Where it's like you can't sleep because you can't turn your brain off. Like, I sleep with the television on, because if I don't, I will hear my own, like, I will hear my own voice doing all this stupid shit in my head. So instead, I have to listen to something else, the radio, the TV, an audiobook, podcast, something. Because otherwise, I will sit there and I will be like, I need to take the laundry out, or I need to, you know, fold that, or I need to take the trash out, or is tomorrow the recycle day? Oh my God, I forgot to answer that email for work. Oh my God, is that going to be a problem? My meeting is at nine. I have to wake up at eight. My meeting's at nine. Is that enough time? Should I wake up? Like, it's the worst. So she's going through that.
Maybe we need to practice mind-stilling ourselves.
I'm sort of with Nesta, though, where it's like, I'm not super convinced that it works, because, like, I understand the concept of, like, I let the thought come and then I let it go away. It's really not the letting it go away that's the problem. It's just that then more thoughts come.
I'm trying to help.
In fairness, that may also be called, like, ADD. Like, that may be, like, an underlying problem.
That would be correct. As the mother of one of those children that has been diagnosed, I can say emphatically, yes.
Anyway, that's what Nesta's experiencing. Yeah. And why she's not sleeping or doing something useful.
Right. So the house being the house brings her a glass of warm milk. And she's contemplating how the spring court felt, that it had felt empty and stagnant. And then she goes, but the house feels alive. It had welcomed her. It wants her to grow and thrive. And then she finally, then she has the thought, well, is this what home is? You know, something she had never really learned, but a place. And she finally acknowledges that maybe this is what Feyre had felt when she'd left the spring court and come to the night court. Maybe Feyre had fallen in love with the court as much as she had the High Lord. And so she does realize something is stirring in the darkness below. Nesta kind of straightens, and then she expects it. You know, it starts to move towards her, this darkness inside. And then the next thing she goes, Cassian is next to her, completely startling her. And he goes, yeah, I thought I'd find you here. Well, either here or in the stairs to the city. He goes on alert, but there's nothing. Apparently, whatever it is has disappeared. It's like it knew that he was there and disappeared. I think it's cute because she's like, oh, you can't sleep. And she's like, nope, I keep thinking about Tamlin. And he's like, look, you did really well with him and Eris. And she's like, well, Eris is a snake. And she's like, you know, she tells him, well, I don't appreciate how he talks about you. And she goes, you know, he's like, that's how a lot of people talk to me. And she's like, but that doesn't make it right. And yet she acknowledges she had spoken to him that way. And then she's like, you know, I can't believe Feyre ever loved him. And Cassie's like, he never deserved her. And her only response to that is, nope, no, he didn't. And that's the end of the chapter.
I know. I really like that moment. I like that moment for them a little bit, because I think there's an interesting, you know, I mean, A, it's interesting because, like, they're mates or whatever. But there's also an interesting interplay with the two of them, in the sense that Nesta was at a time in her life where she couldn't be the older sister that Feyre needed. But he absolutely stepped up to be the older brother that she needed.
Absolutely.
And so in a way, it's a trade-off. It's kind of like Nesta wasn't in a place to do what she had to do, but he absolutely could, you know? And so he did. And it's like, I don't know. I just like that. I think that's nice that like the two of them, it's absolutely an example of the two of them together is better than either of them individually. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? They both bring in very important things for each other, I think. I think this moment is like one of those ones that's like shows them as closer to equals than we see them in a lot of situations. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, I do.
In a lot of situations, one of them is clearly the, you know, leader of the situation and the other one is following. Whether she's doing the talking and he's just backing her up, or he's fighting either for her or within the inner circle and she's just there backing him up. You know what I mean? This is one of those conversations where it's just the two of them and they are actually equals in the conversation. And I love it.
I think it's a sweet little moment. We don't get a whole lot of those for a while. So after this, so I do enjoy it. I'm not even gonna lie. So it's
Okay, so chapter 44. Okay, so this is like the beginning of the end. this chapter is like fine, but some shiznit's gonna go down obviously before the end of this episode. And I just sort of feel like, yeah, like what you said, where it's like that was a nice sweet moment for them. This is like a funny thing, like this chapter starts off with kind of like a funny, you know, back and forth with the girls, and then it's just gonna like continue to build and then get worse. Here we go, 44. Someone remind me why this was a good idea. Remind me too. They are sword fighting, working. Well, they're doing their basic sword work. They're sweaty, they're tired. It's the girls, it's Gwen and Emery and Nesta, and they're just like
they're dying.
Yes. And Cassian's laughing at them, which probably doesn't help. And you know, all you have to know is this is like the next day. Yeah, this is the next day. The night before, they'd had that nice conversation. They kind of just let that conversation linger for a minute. And then he did walk her to her room, but he left her alone. They didn't do things. Because they had had like their moment. And they also had had a weird day. And everybody just needed to go to sleep.
True.
So, fair. He does give her a kiss, which is nice. And this is whatever. Like, okay, we're like a normal couple now. they don't know it, but we do.
Well, the mistake was when he takes her back to her room after the little tete-a-tete in the library, he spies.
Yeah.
The copy of Gwen's chapters about the Valkyries on Nesta's desk. Oh, God, here we go.
Yeah. Actually, I'm wrong. He wasn't going to do things, but I guess we eventually did. Just not all the things. Not as bad as we've done in the past. Anyway, it's fine. Everybody's fine. We don't get a lot of visual, thank the Lord, which is why I forgot about it, because it wasn't disgusting. Nasty, I would have remembered, but no, he was going to kiss her and say goodnight, and then, yeah, and then mistake.
He got turned on.
It's fine. Everything's fine. But yeah, it was like normal. It wasn't super wild and weird and whatever. It's just like a page of normalcy. like I said, we got kind of a normal amount of couple going on now. We know it. They don't. Yep, whatever. Yep, it's fine. They'll catch up one day, maybe, if he stops saying stupid shit, which I can't say that he does in the next chapter. Anyway, moving on. We're working out. The girls are sweaty. They're trying to complain, but also say they're not complaining, which I, you know, as somebody who used to work out, I feel that you'd be like, I'm not complaining, but insert, complaint here. we're just running. You're just running us ragged, Cassian, is what Gwen tells him. Like, we're not complaining. It's just a lot. And Cassian says, some Valkyrie unit you have. And Gwen is like, oh, man, you told him, this is so embarrassing.
Both Nesta and Cassie at the same time are like, no. And then Cassie's like, look, no. I think I haven't noticed the breathing techniques to let you get that calm, steady look even when me and Az are pissing you off. I sure as hell didn't teach you that. I can recognize mine stilling a mile off. And they're gawking. And Gwen's like, wait, but you know that technique? And here we go. Here's, of course I do.
See?
I fought beside the Valkyries in the war.
Yeah, Kim filled us in for that because we wondered that a couple episodes back. I was like, I feel like there's a weird, like, I don't understand, like, the timing of this. Now we do.
Yep. And the girls are all like, blink.
Yeah. What? Say what? Give more details, please. And so he does. He says, I fought beside Valkyries for 5 battles, but that stopped at the Battle of the Mimir Pass when most of them died to save it. The Valkyries knew it was a suicide mission from the start. Asriel at this point is like realizing the conversation that's happening over yonder, because as you recall, he's working with some of the newer priestesses on some of the more basic stuff, and he's realizing the conversation that's happening, and he's like, I'm just gonna carry on, but I'm also gonna listen. I don't know where this is going. Asriel's like, I didn't know we were doing story time at these things. Okay.
But it's not story time with Papa S, and it's not story time with High Lord Rhys, so.
Yeah, he's like, I didn't know Cassian tells stories. I'm gonna listen, but I'm also gonna try not to be weird about it, so I'm gonna listen from over here using my shadows.
But remember, you never know if Cassian had ever had anything to do with, I mean, Cassian, if Asriel had anything to do with the Illyri, with the Valkyries. The only one we ever know. And I will say this right now, the only one that we're ever aware of that had any interaction with Valkyries of the Bat Boys is Cassian.
Sure. So, yeah. So Asriel's either listening because, yeah, he's got a couple, yeah, we don't know exactly his motivations. Either Cassian doesn't talk about it much, so he hasn't heard much of it. Or he thinks this is going to open up a sore wound on Cassian later that, you know, he's going to have to deal with. Like, we all do that, like, with our siblings or our friends. We're like, oh, we can see where this is going. Or who knows? Maybe, like I said, maybe it's just, he's doing story time. I was not aware that was a thing we do here.
You never know. I mean, and, you know, the thing is, so then Gwen's like, but if they fought, like, if they knew it was going to be a slaughter, why did they do this? You know, I can't find any of the politics about this, what the decision was. And he's like, look, I don't know. I was just a grunt in an Illyrian legion. Like, I don't know. And then all he says is that he had friends that fell that day. And he goes, and he says, you know, the Valkyries fought when even the bravest males would not. The Illyrians tried to forget that. I fought against the males who were my superiors, arguing to help the Valkyries. They beat me senseless and chained me to a supply wagon and left me there. When I came to, the battle was over and the Valkyries had been slain.
Yeah. And they're kind of like, oh, well, like, okay, well, why didn't you mention this before? And he just kind of pulls the, well, you didn't ask. And Gwen's like, okay, well, I don't want to get in the politics of y'all's relationship about why you do not tell each other things, but question, sir, if you feel this way about the Valkyries, then why haven't we been using their techniques from the get-go? If you know what I know, what you know, then why, if you know that we want to be like the Valkyrie, then why didn't you teach us the Valkyrie thingies? And she, you know, I'm joking, obviously, but that's sort of what she's asking. And he admits because he doesn't know them.
Yep.
And so Nesta just kind of smirks and she's like, all right, fine. Well, if you don't know them, but we got books and we got Gwen who knows shit about books, then why don't we take what you know and what the Illyrians do and what we can get from the Valkyrie books and why don't we combine them into something new? And I'm like, this is adorable.
And bring them back.
This is cute. I love this plan. And it's cute because the way it reads is, she meant it in jest, but the words rumbled through space as if she'd spoken some great truth, something that made fate sit up. And I do love that, that for a minute, everybody's like, oh, your joke is actually a really great idea. And Cassian actually, everybody has this moment and Cassian kind of observes everybody having this moment where it kind of sits in them where they're like, yeah, I know she's joking, but like, let's do it, you know? And I think that's the energy in a room. If you're ever like working on a project or working on something that like hasn't been working. And then suddenly somebody says something and everybody's like, oh, we're all going to be okay. Like, yeah. That. So I do love that.
Yes.
And he says, today we learn Illyrian techniques. Tomorrow you bring me what you got and I will help you like figure it out.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Gwen's like, it's a lot. Meryl's writing a book.
Yeah, she's like, girl, like, she's like, dude, I got a lot. Okay. Like, do you got a wheelbarrow?
But he's like, he keeps mulling Nesta's idea over in his head. He's like, something new, something old becoming something new. He likes it. And then I love how this ends. He goes, all right, ladies, first lesson about Valkyries. They don't whine about being sweaty. We have a snowflake.
Love that. We come back from the snowflake for what I have decided is the weirdest thing that, like, I logically, like, it's been mentioned in the book previously, and, like, logically I knew it, but, like, now that I'm thinking about it, this is fucking weird. So I guess Cassian just, like, goes over to the house for dinner, like the river house.
Mm-hmm.
Probably rather frequently.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but it's a little weird because obviously then when they all get together for quote-unquote family dinner, it's everybody but Nesta so that we can all fucking talk. Yeah, like I kind of forgot. Like I logically knew because obviously he goes there sometimes, other times in the book. And like obviously Nesta, like chapters from her perspective, a lot of times he's not there for dinner. And so it's like she logically knows where he's at. And so it's like come up. But I kind of forgot until I'm reading this where I'm like, oh my... The reason I say this is because if you read it one way, like if you're reading it for the first time in this paragraph, you're just like, yeah, whatever. But if you're reading it knowing what you know for the rest of like this part, part two, like through whatever chapter that is, like 51, mm-hmm. It's like, it's what I've used to say, like in the other, well, I've said it in like every book we've read so far, but it's kind of like you want a villain. This is how you get a villain.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like Nesta does half of what she does because of the way you set her up for failure. And one of the things you keep fucking doing is getting together and making decisions on her behalf and discussing her without her being present.
Right. But it gets funnier because then he's like, and some were also as bloodthirsty. You know, he goes, you know, some were as lovely as you, Elaine, from the outside. But once they set foot into the arena of battle, they became as bloodthirsty as Amarin. Which Amber raises her glass and she's like, I like those females. Never let a male boss them around, though I could have done without their foolish king.
Yeah.
That means that Amber knows the Valkyries. She knew about them. She could be helping Meryl.
Right. Yeah. Just, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I literally have nothing to add to that because, yes. Yeah. I don't know. Amarin's just being a dick these days. And apparently everybody's just going to let her get away with it. Whatever. I think Cassian says a lovely thing where he says Nesta would have fit in well with them. And I think that that's a nice thing, too, because I think a lot of people experience that at some point in their life where sometimes it's not that you're the problem or even like your friend or your family or whatever is the problem. Sometimes nobody's technically the problem. Just you're not fitting where you're at the moment, you know? True. And I think this is a great example of Cassian being like, if Nesta had all along had the friends she has now, if Nesta had all along had access to the training and essentially the therapy that she needed, like, look how good she's doing now. She could have been doing this well this whole time. I really think that like, she is now finding a good space for her. This is a good fit for her.
It is. And so this is where it gets really fascinating because all of a sudden Elaine starts to tell us some stuff about Nesta.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating because Elaine's like, yeah, I always thought she was born on the wrong side of the wall. She made ballrooms into battlefields and plotted like any general. And she says, like you two, meaning Azrael and Cassian.
Yeah.
And she's like, and Cassian's like, yeah. Okay. And she's like, no, you only think you know. You haven't seen her on the dance floor. That's when Nesta truly lets her inner wolf run free, when there's music.
Oh, I will say Feyre says a thing that I loved where, because you remember there was all of that talk back in like Akatar, a little bit in Akamath, not so much like Akawar and stuff, but where we had referred to Feyre as a wolf, and Feyre had even like internalized some of that mm-hmm. in Akamath. And then in this, Feyre says Nesta is a wolf who has been locked in a cage her whole life.
True.
And I love that because that also tells us what I have always said is true, which is the sisters may fight like cats and dogs. They may not get along. They may not see eye to eye. Maybe not all of them was as good to each other or whatever as they should have been. But they all kind of abide by that. Like, I can talk shit about my sister, but nobody else can talk shit about my sister. And that's kind of what we're seeing here, which is like Feyre actually has always had respect for Nesta. We've talked about that in the past, about how she would always constantly think like, what would Nesta do early on? You know, what would Nesta say? And this proves that too, which is we actually always knew that something was like, we always knew that she didn't fit. We always knew that she was forcing herself to fit into a box, and that that was probably going to make us all pay someday. like caging an animal is never a good idea. People are always like, oh, it's not safe. Let's put the animal in a cage. Yeah, that's also how you make them fucking nuts.
Well, it is. And the other part that comes out of this, so we're going to have some story time here with Elaine, which is kind of fascinating, actually.
It is.
And Elaine, so she starts to explain. And you know, when Elaine made the comment about, yeah, she really comes to life when there's music, it triggers a memory that Cassian had, that Nesta had said at one point, yeah, you know, he's taken her out of some seedy, god-awful tavern. And she's like, I'd just been there for the music. And he had blown her off.
And I think we get that story in this book, but I think the timeline is Frost and Starlight.
Remember, when she kept going
and everybody kept being a dick about it.
And I think, you know, so it is. That's exactly what it is. But it's like, he's starting to wonder if she was actually telling the truth. Like, it's that whole, maybe I shouldn't have blown her off. And
yeah, like maybe she actually did need that. Like maybe that actually was what was happening. Was she drinking too much while she was doing it? Sure. You know what I mean? But I think a lot of people thought she went for the drink. I think she went for the music and happened to drink while she was there.
And Elaine's like, yeah, she was trained to dance from a very young age. She loves it and music. Not in the way I enjoy a waltz or a gavotte, but in the way that performers make an art of it. Nesta could bring an entire ballroom to a halt when she danced with someone. I think it's interesting because, so we know for a fact that Feyre is an artist like a painter, and Nesta loves to read, but Nesta's art form is dance. She loves music, but it's dance. So I find it very fascinating. And, you know, even Cassie's like, yeah, she had mentioned dance lessons, and he figured that that's how she learned her footwork for sword fighting. And Elaine's like, yeah, no, she wouldn't go into much detail about it with you. That would make sense. And he's like, Nesta was only 14 at the last ball we went to before we were poor. And apparently another young heiress was at the ball, and she positively hated Elaine. This girl was 7 years older. And she was just jealous because Elaine was just so beautiful. And anyway, Nesta saw how she treated Elaine and her cruelty, and Nesta got pissed.
I don't know. I love that Nesta, even at like 14, was able to pick up. And like I said, it's exactly what I said. This story plays into that, where it's like, I may talk shit about my sister, but you can't talk shit about my sister.
Well, yeah. And it was the whole... So apparently they're at this ball, and this Duke had come over from the continent because he was looking for a bride because his family had run out of money. And this other heiress had set her sights on the Duke. And Nesta was like, watch this, you know? And she had dressed in the whole bit. And at the time, their father gave in to Nesta because he was, according to Elaine, terrified of Nesta.
But also incredibly rich. Like, Cassian, as she's explaining this, realizes he had no idea the kind of money and life they had lived
prior
previously.
And, you know, as Elaine says, she truly looked the part of the daughter of the Prince of Merchants, an amethyst silk gown with gold thread, diamonds and pearls at her neck and ears. And it's just, you kind of think about that. It's like, Jesus Christ.
To go from that to living how they were living at the beginning of Avatar. And I think we all had a hard time with that understanding. Like, I think when we hear they lost their money, they lost their standing in society, we sort of think of it more as the second, which is they're just pissed because they lost their standing in society and Nesta's being a bitch about it. No, imagine like having multiple people who show up throughout your day to like feed you and dress you, to having to do to starving. You know what I mean? No wonder she was such a bitch. You know what I mean? Like, I understand that Feyre stepped up, but on the other hand, like, yes, that just shows better on Feyre, but it doesn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think we gave Nesta and Elaine way too much shit, acting like they should have known what to do. How would they? How would they?
And Elaine acknowledges, so at this ball, when Nesta enters, the entire ball literally stops.
Yeah.
And, you know, she made an entrance. And at 14, wearing more money and wealth than anyone else in the room, to include this other heiress. Amryn's like, oh, so Nesta tried to win a duke at 14 out of spite. And Elaine's like, she lured him into asking her for a dance with a few well-placed looks across the ballroom. The same waltz that the heiress wanted for herself and had boasted would be all she needed to secure his marriage bid. Nesta took that dance from her and then took the duke from her too. Nesta danced that night like she was one of you. Elaine's like, no, the duke was vain. Nesta played into it. The entire room came to a standstill. Their dancing was that good. She was that beautiful. And when it ended, I knew she was an artist then, the same way Feyre is. But what Feyre does with paint, that's what Nesta did with music and dance. Our mother saw it when we were children and honed it into a weapon. So all Nesta might do one day is to marry a prince. And Asriel's like, so what happened to the duke? And Elaine's like, he proposed marriage the next morning.
Yeah.
And Rhys is like, she was 14.
I just like, I told you, Nesta is a very good dancer.
I'm just like, he, you know, their father recognized that Nesta had taunted the duke into making a marriage offer. She had no interest in marrying him. She knew she was too young. And then Feyre, at the end of all of this, is just like, I forgot about that. I forgot about Nesta and her dancing.
And I think what's interesting about that is that even Feyre, so this is why age gap in children matters. I have never heard it put more clearly than I had seen. I recently was rewatching The Middle, and I love that show. I think it's hysterically done. I think that it has some really good, like some really great comedic timing. I mean, I think it's a little obviously much. It's a sitcom, but there's a great moment where in like the, maybe it's the last episode, it's second to last episode. The oldest brother is going to move away, and like all of them had always lived, even when they were, you know, the two older are in college. I think they're only like an hour and a half away from home or something, maybe like 2 hours, but they come home all the time, and the sister had kept saying like, I want us to have a bonding moment before you leave. And the little brother didn't really care. Now the age gap between the brother and sister is, I think, like a year or two, but the age gap between like this middle sister and the younger brother, it's like a solid, I want to say like 3 to 5 years. I really think it's more than three. I think it's 4 or 5 years. Like, I think at the end he's going to high school and she's already starting to wrap up college. So I think it's, yeah, a solid like 5 or 6 years or something. But in the episode where they do finally all have like that bonding moment before he leaves, the oldest brother is kind of having his bonding moment with the little boy. The younger boy, he's not little, he's like middle school, but he's having a bonding moment with the younger boy. And the sister's like, I want my bonding moment too. And so then they start chatting and the younger brother goes, I don't remember any of this. And the sister finally looks at him and says, you weren't there. Like, we had a whole life of just the two of us and mom and dad for years before you were born. And it's not like, you know, then you came and that was great, but we had a completely different childhood where it was just the two of us and mom and dad before you came along. And I think that's a little bit what Elaine and Nesta experience with Feyre, which is, Feyre's not that far removed, I don't think, but there's this moment where it's like, Feyre was young and probably didn't internalize as much of this because I don't know how much of it she understood was going on. If Nesta's 14 and Elaine's like 13, I think that only makes Feyre 9. Maybe 9 10,
or 10,
right?
Yeah, 9 or 10.
And so if she was never that interested and the mother had never shown that much interest in making her like Nesta, then she probably didn't take any of this in. She was just like, yeah, Nesta's wearing a fancy dress and she's dancing.
Right.
She didn't necessarily know the backstory at the time. Or even if she did, she was 10.
Right.
She didn't understand it.
And of course, Amryn's whole thing is, so your mother twisted Nesta's creative joys into a social climber's arsenal. And Feyre has the best response because she's like, our mother was not what one would call a pleasant person. Nesta has made her own choices, but our mother laid the groundwork.
Yeah.
And I think it's great because I think it's showing that, you know, for as nasty as Amryn's being, Feyre and even Elaine recognize that some of this has nothing to do with Nesta as far as Nesta being Nesta as much as it has to do with the way she was raised and the way her mother caused her brain processes to evolve.
Sure.
To make decisions.
It's that they are finally, right, it's that they are finally acknowledging that everybody else at this table has at one point or another made bad decisions based on their trauma. And now we are acknowledging that actually up until this moment, we had never given that space to Nesta, and maybe we need to. In a way, this is a great growing moment because I think as everybody's listening to this story, Elaine is telling it and Elaine is realizing that maybe she didn't leave enough space because actually she does know Nesta very well. And everybody else is hearing this and realizing now they understand a little more too, you know? And it's like, it's a real shame that this conversation wasn't had a year and a half ago.
I agree 100%.
Because I think this is a great growing moment for everyone involved, but I think it's, in a way, a little too late. You know what I mean? Like,
too little, too late? Yeah.
Yeah, too little. Yeah. I think it's like, this is great, but...
I mean, Elaine does acknowledge she's really happy about this, that Nesta has found an interest in something, and that she might channel all of her rage and her anger and her, you know, just that energy into something that ultimately could become a positive thing. And Cassian, in listening to all this, does realize that, you know, okay, so yeah, the training's going to deal with the rage and it'll give her that joy of movement that she got from dancing, but there had to be more. There had to be joy. There had to be music.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the chapter.
So, chapter 45. This is like where it goes downhill real fast. Mm-hmm. Oh, Lordy. Like, it's great. We're all starting to, like, you know, like Nesta more. And now we're going to, like, big time. Like, I told you, we just, like, fucking set this girl up for failure all the time. Okay. So, we're back with girls. We're back to talking Valkyries and Illyrians and mind-stealing and blah, 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 blah. What's that phrase they use? I am the rock against which the surf crashes.
Correct.
A rock never had to hold a lunge, though, is the conversation that we're having, which I think is a little bit funny. Emery is gone. This is outrageous. Like, I don't even understand. Like, Cassie's asking too much. There's no way he could hold these lunges like this. Blah, blah, blah. It's really funny. You know, my legs might break. These are the conversations we're having. And Cassian finally yells out the time. You three still have 20 seconds. They still got 20 more seconds on the clock to hold this lunge. And so obviously everybody's like just a mess, right? It's burning. Everybody's trying to like just wiggle out these last 20 seconds. We're trying to breathe, trying to mind still, trying to get through the pain and the shaking that you get to when you're holding something for a really long time. You know, we just got one more deep breath and time. Okay, thank God. Now we're all just going to melt for a second. But Cassian tells them, pathetic.
And Gwen's like, I don't think even you can do that.
To which Cassian points out he already has. I figure if I'm going to torture you three, I should at least be able to back it up. For exactly the moment when you growls that I should suffer along with you. So basically every morning, or at least at some point before they do the workout for the day, he has already done it.
Mm-hmm.
To which Emery points out, no wonder you look like that. He takes it as a compliment. Nesta's just like, either because Emery, I don't know how to interpret this sentence. It says, his grin tightened something low in Nesta's gut. I don't know if it's a tighten like, he's so pretty, or if it's more like, I love Emery and I know she's just trying to compliment my man, but that's my man.
I think it's the latter.
But whatever. Cassian, Jesus fucking my man. As soon as this conversation starts, I'm like, we're fucked. We're so fucked. Like, this is why you can't trust. So I can't let dudes do stuff like this. This is why the fuck up was back when Feyre was like, I'll tell her. He really should have let her. So he's like, so like, girls, if y'all had a sword and you were gonna name it, what would you call it? And Gwen, now we have this weird little conversations. I think it's supposed to be cute. I think it's just kind of drawn out way too long. Gwen's like, Silver Majesty, why? Blah, 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 blah. Emery's like, Foe Slayer or something intimidating. Like, we're just going back and forth. It's supposed to be cute. I think in television or a movie, it would play out really cute, a la like Buffy the Vampire Slayer banter. I think it'd be cute. Reading it, I was like, just get to the part where we fuck this up. Like, I know where we're going. Just... Nesta's like, I don't know. Cassian's like, whoa, humor me. And she's like, I don't know, killer. And like, you know what I mean? Like, it kind of makes sense. And he's like, you know, just tell me, if you had to name a sword, what would you call it? And Emery's like, what the fuck is your deal, man? Like, are you getting her a sword as a winter solstice gift? Like, what the fuck? Like, chill out. And everybody's, you know, kind of jumping on him like, this is a fucking weird conversation. And instead of like internalizing that and being like, you're right, this is going horribly wrong already, I should shut the fuck up, he just keeps asking. And when Gwen's like, why? He says, curiosity.
Wrong.
And he doesn't, yeah, he doesn't fucking let this shit go. He kind of tries to like get back to just like the workout part, and like everybody's sweating and wobbly, and Nesta's finally like, you know, like we finish up sort of, we go get some water. But I think he was trying to use the cover of working out, hoping she'd be distracted while they were having this conversation. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really work, because now we're getting water and she's like, so like, why are you pestering me? Like, what the fuck? Like, why do you care what I would name a sword? And he's like, I just wanted to know. And she's like, that's not an answer. Like, why do you want to know? And then it like sort of started off okay. Like, I think this was the wrong time and place, but he sort of started off okay, just being like, I'm going to tell you the neutral version of what happened. But he like very quickly fucks this up. Do you remember when we went to the blacksmith? To which she's like, yeah, fucking, that was like a week ago. Like, how would I forget?
Like, oh, he's giving me a sword for winter solstice?
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, okay, so he's giving me a sword, right? Is that what you're saying? And he's like, sort of. Like, he's giving you three. It's the ones, and this is where I, like, feel like he already fucked up. He's like, it's the ones you touched. I feel like if he had just been like, yeah, like, I feel like the neutral way of saying this was, hey, Nesta, okay, I'll be straight with you. Yeah, I was asking because you are going to want to name some stuff. Because remember, we went and we made some stuff at the blacksmith. You made like three things. Yeah, all three of those, you're getting those. He doesn't want them anymore. Like, I even think that would have been a better delivery. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But instead, it's like, no, it's the ones you touched. Like, this is already going poorly. And then he tries to explain it. When you hammered those blades, you imbued them with the swords and the dagger. You remember those? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Power. Like, your power. The cauldron's power. They're now magic blades. And I'm not talking nice, pretty magic. I'm talking big ancient magic that hasn't been seen in a long, long time. There are no magic weapons left. None. They are either lost or destroyed or dumped in the sea. But you just made three of them. You created a new dread trove. You could create even more objects if you wished. Okay, I delivered that like I talk, specifically because he says it like I say junk. This is never how I would have said it to Nesta.
No.
Those are the fucking words on the page. Like, I sound like that. When I summarize stuff for you guys, I say stuff like that. I say stuff like, not pretty magic, big, ugly, bad, Buffy magic. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I say junk like that. Fucking, that's literally what Cassian says to her. Nesta is actually taking this at the beginning better than I expected. I made three magic weapons.
Question.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, is that what you, like, summing up what you just fucking said? I made three magic weapons, right? Uh-huh. Yes. We don't really know what kind of magic, but yes. Okay, now he fucked up.
One word never been uttered out of his mouth. We.
We? We don't know? Now, in fairness, this is a little weird because honestly, if somebody had said, we don't know, I don't know if I would have picked up on the we, because the we at this time now could be any group of people who has touched these. That would include Cassian, now you who have this information, and the blacksmith. Like, you know what I mean? That's still we. And if he had been smart, I understand it was a lie, but if he had been smart at this time, he would have been like, yeah, we... me and the blacksmith, we don't know.
And of course, Nesta's like, so who is we? And he's like, Rhys and Feyre and the others. And then she goes, how long have you known about this? And he's like, oh, fuck. And she goes, how long? Everybody is now watching the priestesses, Gwyn, Emery. Gwyn and Emery are like, oh, shit, do we need to come, like, oh, shit.
Yeah, you know? They're like, I can tell that this, whatever's happening over there is bad, ugly, bad news bears.
And he's like, he's realizing what's going on. And he's like, this isn't the place to talk about it. And then she loses it because she's like, you were the.
Yeah, and that was also the mistake. This isn't the place to talk about it. Then why'd you fucking bring it up?
And she's like, you were the one trying to get me to answer this, blah, blah, blah. And she's so angry.
And she's right.
And Cassian's like, this isn't coming out the way that it should.
Really? Really? Is that
just- okay. And here's where he really fucks up. Yeah. We argued about whether to tell you, but we took a vote and it went in your favor because we trust you. I just hadn't gotten a chance to bring it up yet. And she's like, well, wait a minute. There was a possibility you wouldn't even tell me. You all sat around and judged me and then you voted.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing. Yes. Problem I have with a lot of Nesta hate is it gets presented like, and then she overreacts. Actually, that's exactly what happened. And that is actually really messed up.
Yeah. And so then she's like.
Like, it'd be one thing if it had been like, the weapons got dropped off, they argued about it for a couple of hours, and then Cassian told her the next day. Then you'd be like, yeah, she's overreacting. They did. Obviously, they had to discuss it. She wasn't there. They had to decide what to do. He told her basically as soon as he could, yeah, she's overreacting. Mm-hmm. But no, she's absolutely right. They sat around, they judged her, they argued about it, waited a few days, and then told her. No, fuck that.
Mm-hmm. So then she legitimately is like, who voted against me? He's smart enough not to even try. And he just says Rhys and Amarin. And she acknowledges Rhys, no surprise. Amarin hurt in a big bad way. Because she's like, Amarin, who had always understood her more than others. Amarin, who'd always been unafraid of her. Some small part of her had hoped that Amarin wouldn't hate her forever. Everything inside of Nesta goes quiet, and not just a little quiet.
Yeah.
And she just chooses all the mind still and chooses everything she can because she's gonna protect herself and wrap herself around. And both Gwyn and Emery are like, oh shit.
Yeah, because like I think the thing is like Nesta, like Cassian knows what happened and he knows he fucked up, right? But, like, Gwyn and Emery can just literally, like, read the vibe coming off of her about, like, how truly bad whatever just happened, how bad this went. Like, how bad this is now fucked Nesta up.
And she leaves. She walks out. And Emery's right behind her going, what happened? What's wrong? Yeah. Nesta's like, nothing. It's court business. And Gwen's, like, right behind them. And she's like, are you okay? And internally, she's like, nope, I'm not good at all. I'm furious. I'm beyond furious.
Yeah.
And she lies to them and says yes. And she vanishes down the hall. She made it to her bedroom where she ran the bath. She knowing Cassian was going to come by.
Yeah.
He does. And she waited until she knew he had left. She turns the water off. And I love it. She asks the house, is he gone? And the door opens. Thank you.
The thing is, and I think this is what we have to remember at the house. And I think this is also, I don't know, I just really enjoy this because I think it backs up what you and I are saying, which is in this case, Nesta is really not overreacting. And actually, this is as fucked as it gets because the house doesn't let Nesta do things that are bad for Nesta.
Right.
The house doesn't let her drink. The house tries to feed her, make her eat mostly healthy. You know, it tries to support her where she's at. Mm-hmm. And so for the house to be like, no, he's gone. You're free to go. Like, fuck that guy.
Mm-hmm.
The house knows Nesta's angry for good reason. Like, this is an instance where the house could have just stayed silent and it would have been not here nor there what the house thinks. No, the house thinks Nest is right.
That's not good. I'm sorry.
I mean, think about it, because like we know what's going to happen next. I argue the house absolutely knows Nest is right, because I would argue that maybe the house has had a little bit to play in not letting her out. I mean, some of it was literally her own inability, but I think the house probably had a little bit of its own magic to do with it as well.
I agree.
You know?
I agree.
And so knowing that the house has now decided, no, he's gone. You're free to go. And I'm actually going to make sure that it's as easy as possible for you to. The house is about to let her free on Velaris, for lack of a better way to say it. The house thinks she's right.
Absolutely. At which point she leaves. And she, of course, heads to the stairs. And she finally lets go of the control she had. And she gets so angry because she's like, Amryn had deemed her so horrible, so terrible, so dangerous that she had said, no, we can't let Nesta know. She's angry. The angrier she gets, the faster she ends up going down the stairs, the closer she gets to the ground floor to exit. And she's like, Amryn had totally given up on her. And she's like, Nesta knew that the debate had been out of a desire to help her, and she could acknowledge it. This debate had not been out of that, but had been out of hatred and fear of her.
Right, right. And I think that's the key as to why the house agrees with her.
I agree.
Because I think if, like she said, like when it was about debating what to do with her and send her there, it's a little bit like a family debating on sending somebody in their family to like AA or sending them to like go detox somewhere. It's a hard decision. Families don't always make the right decision. But for the most part, it's out of a place of wanting to help that person. Mm-hmm. Like the why is a good why. The executions is sometimes poor, but the reasoning is good. In this situation, the reasoning is actually the problem.
Right, because she acknowledges that the debate that they had had to send her to the house was the right debate to have. This debate, on the other hand, was not because anyone cared, not because they want to help her help herself. This was because they're afraid of her and they hate her.
It's like we said last episode, it's very much Tamlin locking up Feyre. Mm-hmm. If they don't think about it, if they don't acknowledge it, they don't have to deal
exactly.
with it. Like, we didn't want to train Feyre because we didn't want to have to deal with the fact that she was probably more powerful than Tamlin. She is, but they weren't sure at the time. But, you know, he didn't want to have to deal with that. Now they don't want to face the fact that Nesta could be practically equally as powerful as Reach. That's a problem for them.
Yep.
So at the very least, maybe powerful is not quite the right word, but as deadly. Powerful mostly because she has no, it goes back to the resources thing. Mm-hmm. There's a timeline and ability maybe there for her to be as powerful given what we know, but nobody is supplying her with the resources or the know-how to channel it well. So I would argue that at this moment she's as deadly.
I agree. I think my bigger problem is that I don't know if Amryn ever really wanted her to learn.
Right. That's kind of my point. Like, that's why I'm like, this comes down to, she is, like I said, Nesta can be whiny. I probably give her too much leeway, probably an older daughter thing where probably older daughters identify with older daughters. So like, I probably give her too much leeway. But in this situation where she's saying this debate had been out of hatred and fear of her, again, she's absolutely 100% correct. That is exactly where it came from. Mm-hmm. It came out of ignorance and fear.
It did. It totally did. And
so
she's literally flying down these stairs. 10,000 stairs. The stairs suddenly stop. And she found herself before the door. She doesn't touch the door. The door opens. So we know the house is on her side. The house is like, here, let me open this for you.
The house could have locked the door. It could have made it not worth her time.
And it lets her out. And there's so much rage coming off of her. She's stepping back into a Velaris at last. And the chapter ends right there.
Yeah. So as I said, the house basically unleashed Nesta on Velaris. And next episode, we will see how that goes.
Not well. but
it is so infuriating, guys. Like, this next episode, I'm kind of dreading like the plague, because Kim and I have discussed it offline, because she's obviously read the book before, but she's also ahead, and I have read ahead. And I, like, we had to have a come to Jesus to, like, get me, like, walk me back off the ledge, because I was about to be like, I fucking hate everybody. Like, I'm just going to say, for my spoiler, it's not really a spoiler, but sort of, my spoiler is I'm having a really, really hard time forgiving Cassian right now. I will get over it. But I'm having a really difficult time defending Cassian in this next section.
To which my answer to her is he's being a guy. He's being a very typical male. And I say this with all the love in my heart for my spouse. And I made her think about it. And even her spouse has done this too. At which point we both acknowledge that we love our men. We do. But they're stupid. But
men think differently, and their thought process. Yeah, it's just, yeah. And that is what it is. It's that we're reading a fantasy. And I think, like what we said when we were chatting about earlier, is I said, you know, the book had been crafted in a very specific way to light Rhys in a very specific way back in Akamath that he did not, like, as bad as Feyre acts like he handled, like, the mating stuff, he actually handled it very well. She's the one who handled it poorly.
Mm-hmm.
I think I expect too much of these characters at this point because of that. Do you see what I'm saying? I expect everybody to live up to that. And I think this book has done I think it's actually done a good job of breaking that down, being like, nope, people always suck. I don't care if you're 500 and mythical, you can still suck.
You can still make really bad, stupid choices.
Yeah, which they do. So, yep, that's next episode. Really looking forward to that. To end on a high note, we do have a TikTok for the first time in a while. We have a TikTok to shout out. And I'm sure there's been, like, amazing content out there for the last few months that somehow I have missed, because I ended up on, like, political TikTok and, like, mom TikTok. And I had a really hard time getting back to book talk for some reason. But I'm finally, like, there now. And it's great. And I'm back in my happy place. So I hope they don't screw up the algorithm again. But this TikTok was done by @JenCDonegan. We'll tag her in the show notes. We'll, like, put a link to the video. And it's about Asriel letting a female prisoner go because shit got weird.
Not just a little weird. A lot weird.
It's hilarious. And, like, all I could think was that, like, that would absolutely, like, her video would absolutely have been the outcome if one of the Autumn soldiers who had been captured and taken back to be, like, you know, questioned, had been a woman.
And had even just a fraction of her mental capacity there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's hilarious. A shout out. We loved it. Check that out. But other than that, Kim has some songs for us, and it includes songs that should have gone with last chapter, because this is a two-parter. You get the deal.
Right. So for all of episode 11, chapters 42 to 45, here are the songs in no particular order. The first one is Legends Never Die by League of Legends. And it really is about the Trove and their discussion about the Trove and what is the Trove and what consisted of the Trove and these new swords. And
is there a new Trove? Can anybody make a Trove? Trove.
Yeah, it's all about the Trove and making a Trove and whatever. Because I figured, you know, talking about it, they're like a legend. They never die. The next song is...
I'm going to make a sign for my office that's like Kelsey's Trove.
You mean like mine?
Yes.
Between my office and the books? Yeah. Anyway, I have a stack of books in my room, you guys. My TBR in my bedroom is kind of scary. Anyhow, the next song is Warrior by Beth Crowley, and it's about the Valkyries, talking about the Valkyries and what it is to be a Valkyrie. The next song, if you guys remember back several episodes, I talked about my friend Brian McGinty, who I've known Brian for forever. And anyway, like I said, he put out an album. It is on Spotify. Please go check it out, you guys. It's such a great album. And Brian's just the most awesome guy in the world. we went to middle school. Well, we didn't go to middle school together, but I've known him since middle school. Anyway, it's a song he wrote called I could be wrong. And it's really when they're discussing Nesta, and it's kind of from Cassian's point of view about, well, he could be wrong, but, you know, there are things about the situation where he could be right. Anyway, it's I think, a very appropriate fitting song for what's going through sure. Cassian's head. The next song makes me laugh, and I kind of made Kelsey giggle when she heard it, which is when the tough gets going, the going gets. Or when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. It's by Billy Ocean. It's about the Valkyries. Mm-hmm. It's my 80s nod there.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. The next one after that is Start a War by Clergy and Valerie Broussard. Yeah. And it's, you know, Aerys' soldiers, the whole thing with Tamlin, and pissing Nesta off. I think all three parts, they're, you know, they're
it's so, this section was so interesting, especially like listening back to the songs and like, you know, going back to like what we talked about like last episode and then the start of this mm-hmm. one. Like chapter 43 is like a totally different vibe mm-hmm. than the rest of
them. Because in 43, we piss off Tamlin and Aerys.
Yeah. But then after that, everybody pisses off Nesta.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah.
The next one is Kings and Queens by Ava Max.
Love her.
The next one is Kings and Queens by Ava Max.
Love her.
Talk of making Rhys High King, the whole bit.
Sure.
The next song is Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic by The Police. Talking about Nesta making magic swords.
Yep, I still don't understand why we won't let her make like a toaster strudel, but we thought keeping a secret was a good idea. Like, what the fuck?
I don't know. The last song I have is Powerful Magic by Jennifer Goodwin and Josh Dallas, and it's Nesta's magic and the swords. And
are we going to talk about how that means it's from Once Upon a Time?
Fair enough. I'm not. I'm just...
I love it. No, that's just so funny because you know what? You told me that song before and I just went, uh-huh. I was like, yeah, I mean, the title fits. That's great. But then when you actually said it, I was like, oh my God. I love it. Oh man, missed that show. Back when it was the fever dream that it was.
Here's the thing. Like, I knew what I was doing when I picked it. I was just waiting for you to kind of fully wrap your head around it. And I was like, well, I'm not going to go there. I'll let her figure it out on her own.
That is so funny. Okay, I love it. Anyway, yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so all of those will be in the show notes, and it's great, and I love that for us.
Yes.
As always, you can reach out on any of the things. We got MassiveFanBookClub.com, Facebook at Massive Fan Book Club and Podcast, Twitter at Massive Podcast, Instagram Massive Fans Podcast, Pinterest Massive Fan, TikTok Massive Fan Pod, and don't forget about the Discord. That's where we put our GIFs. That's where we have discussions about people in this book being whack-ass.
We've had some really, really, really good conversations out there about this whole section, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. So 10 out of 10 would recommend going to the mm-hmm. Discord.
Totally recommend it.
And until next time, yeah. Yeah. Keep